Joining me in the studio is Katie Carter with Area Voices. Katie, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We've got a couple of guests. Let us know who's with us today.
Yeah, well, as you know, Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of northern Minnesota, and Brian Miller and Randy Gosa make up the Irish music duo The Lost 40. They're well known both individually and as a group in traditional Irish music scenes, and they've been performing this style of music for more than 20 years now. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Good morning.
I was trying to think of a way to best explain to our listeners what it is you guys do with your music. And I thought the best way to unfold the story is to explain the name of your band. Because when I think of the Lost 40, I think of the area deep within the Chippewa Forest.
Right. And that's where we got the name from. So,
what?
Yeah, it is.
No, I thought it was something at the Library of Congress.
Oh, well, it's kind of a metaphor for something at the Library of Congress.
Okay, tell.
So, yeah, so I grew up in Bemidji and have sort of known of the Lost 40 in the Chippewa Forest for a long time, the stand of old growth pine trees that was never logged. And then I went on a whole odyssey with Irish music for, well, you know, for the last 20 years, but about 10 years into my Irish music obsession, I was spending all this time in Ireland and Chicago and Boston, New York, and these Irish strongholds, living in St. Paul. And I became, I think, kind of homesick for northern Minnesota and started to get into the folk music of northern Minnesota. So that's something that I hadn't really heard about growing up, that there being traditional songs sung up north. And it turns out that there were some and that they were Irish in character in many instances, especially during the logging era. So I got really interested in that, did a bunch of research, and it turned out that there were songs collected up here, songs even recorded up here, which was a real shocker. And the recordings actually ended up being sort of forgotten, which makes things more enticing sometimes as a musician when you can find those things that nobody's heard before. So these recordings were in the basement of the, like in the deep vaults of the Library of Congress, and they were made in northern Minnesota in 1924. And Randy and I have sort of made a project around that. And we kind of went back to the idea of the trees and the idea that when something is overlooked, sometimes it becomes more valuable. Mm-hmm. In some ways, the music that we play is similar to those trees in the Lost 40 in that it was forgotten for a long time, and to bring it back to life is exciting, and we hope it's exciting.
Right. So how do you guys bring back these old tunes? What are they, when you come across one, what does it look like or sound like, and then what do you do with it?
So the recordings that Brian unearthed are wax cylinder recordings that were made by Robert Winslow Gordon. So they're very scratchy, hard to decipher, unaccompanied songs. So there aren't any string parts or pianos or anything like that. They're just, it's just a person singing the song.
So what's a wax cylinder?
It's like, imagine a pint glass made out of wax. Okay. That plays music like a record or like a 45 or a 78 would.
Okay.
So it's like a pre-record music consumption device. It's like the first MP3s.
So you listen to it over and over and try to...
You might try to figure out what the song is, there's a few ways you could figure out what the song is based on title or just listening, and then figure out the version that's happening that you're listening to, and then we sort of go down many rabbit holes after that with the arrangement of the song, like musically with the strings and the instruments that we use to accompany the songs.
Okay. And you're learning a lot about history, too, as you're unfolding these.
Yeah, so they end up, a lot of the songs that we've been finding and working with, they do have this Irish character to the way the melodies go and maybe the way the poetry works.
Or they may even be like reappropriated songs that people brought with them from Ireland or England or Scotland, sort of reappropriated the lyrics for their current situation.
Right, and so then that's where some of the history comes in, because the songs would have been rewritten over here. So you take an old sailing song from Ireland and you'd rewrite it about being a sailor on the Great Lakes, or even rewrite it to be about being a lumberjack, because some of the you know, having a bad boss, or working hard, or heavy drinking when you're off work. Some of these things were universal for these kind of laboring guys, whatever the job was.
Okay. We were talking earlier, and I found out neither of you are Irish. So how did this happen? How did this passion happen?
Yeah,
For Irish music
specifically? Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I blame the Winnipeg Folk Festival personally. But yeah, I started going up there when I was a teenager. With people that are involved at KAXE and good friends around the Bemidji area. And I just fell in love with Irish music there. So they would have, like, Irish bands, and that was kind of the height of the river dance. And
yeah, we both sort of were in high school during the height of the North American sort of Irish music and dance phenomenon that was sweeping the country.
Right. So I don't know if they do it anymore, but in those days, Winnipeg would book, like, the Irish band was the Saturday night headliner. So, you know, of course I wanted to do that.
Huh. Those guys were, does that mean your dancers as well, since you were there in the...
Oh, just like airplane dancing in the...
Okay.
So I'm sort of curious how you found out this was at the Library of Congress. How did you get to that?
Well, it turned out that I really liked doing research, which I didn't. I mean, I was a music major and a math major in college, and I didn't do historical research until I got into this, went on this jag with this music, and I just loved doing it. So I went really deep and really hard into researching these singers that lived in northern Minnesota, and I was going through newspaper archives, and that's how I found it. I found an old newspaper article that said, you know, this guy, Michael Dean of Virginia, Minnesota, was, he sang all day into the wax cylinder recording machine, and he had a great voice, and da-da-da. And I was like, what? The recording machine? where are the recordings? And so it was a kind of a big process then of figuring out where the recordings were. And the Library of Congress initially said they didn't have anything, but then they said, oh, well, there's this box that's not labeled very well. And it turned out there were 45 songs down in this unlabeled box down in their vault.
Which that also kind of goes back to the lost 40.
The lore that came to me was that there were 40 cylinders.
And
anyway.
And then so you go there, they don't just ship you that box and say, enjoy.
But you didn't mention that. So the initial kernel when you were looking through the newspaper archives is that you saw a reference to Dean being recorded, like going back
right. And then that's what I found, or what I used to track them down, and they were out there, and there was no way to get to them other than to pay the Library of Congress a lot of money to digitize them, which I actually did because it was cheaper than a plane ticket. But then in the end, I ended up getting a fellowship to go out to the Library of Congress and spend a week not only with the recordings, but with a box of letters that went along with them. So there were actually letters from these northern Minnesotan guys writing. That's how the collector, he was like this interesting academic collector, Robert Winslow Gordon. That's how he went up here, was he'd been corresponding with these guys by letter. So I actually got to look at the letters that were sent from these little places in northern Minnesota.
Wow. So what's going to happen at your show tonight?
Well,
it's
we'll
kind of multimedia. From what
So what we do, because there is the historical component, and we feel like it's important to bring that to life as much as possible. We show photos. We like project these beautiful historical photos we've been collecting over the years as we perform, and they kind of link up with the songs. We've met some of the descendants of some of the singers whose songs we do, and so we have actual photos of the guys, and we talk about some of the history, and we play our beautiful arrangements of the songs. Yeah.
So could you play a beautiful arrangement right now?
We can. Yes.
You have an interesting instrument around your neck right now. I know what yours is, Randy. It looks like an acoustic guitar.
It's an acoustic guitar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nothing fancy over here.
Yeah. So when we started playing together, we were bringing kind of years of experience playing Irish music to this new material from northern Minnesota, new old material. And one of the instruments that's really popular in Irish music is the bouzouki, which it was originally a Greek instrument that got kind of adopted into Irish music. And then since its adoption in Irish music, it's taken on different shapes and sizes. So we both play versions of that, basically. I play what I would call an Irish bouzouki, and it's got doubled strings like a mandolin would have. Randy okay. plays a similar one sometimes that's a little higher pitch than this one.
Okay. Yeah. And the song you have in mind to play?
The song, we're going to do a Great Lakes song. Gordon Lightfoot wasn't the first person to make up a shipwreck song about the Great Lakes. There were a number of them back in the 1800s, and they were popular in the woods, too. People that worked lumbering jobs or railroad jobs, they would have sung these Great Lakes songs as well. So this one's about a shipwreck, a very famous shipwreck in the 1800s. In 1860, the Lady Elgin, it was the Titanic of the Great Lakes, and it was loaded with Irish Democrats from Milwaukee that had gone down to hear Stephen Douglas speak in Chicago. And on the way back, their steamer was crashed into by one of these big old timber schooners.
And everybody perished?
Well, most of them perished, yeah. And it was a huge disaster. The bodies were washing up on the shores of Wisconsin. And it was remembered for a long time, and a poem was made, and then the poem was given a melody by somebody, and it became a song. So we'll give it a try. Lost on the Lady Elgin. 1, 2, 3, 1.
Precious the freight she bore. Gaily they loosed their cables a few short hours before. Proudly she strode our harbor. Joyfully rang her bell. Little they thought her mornings would peal so sad a knell. Lost on the Lady Elgin, sleeping to wake no more. Numbering in death, 500 that failed to reach the shore. Lost on the Lady Elgin, sleeping to wake no more. Numbering in death, 500 that failed to reach the shore. Mm-hmm.
Brian Miller and Randy Gosa, The Lost 40. You can hear them tonight at the Rife Center at 7:30. And you're going to Roseau tomorrow?
We hope.
Okay. So you can find them online at thelost40.com.
And their latest album is out. We've been playing it. It's called The Lonesome Hours of Winter by The Lost 40. New music coming up today at 2 o'clock with Kari Hedlund. You can get tickets for the performance tonight. It's at rifecenter.org. It's Erie Voices, made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.